Hail, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Jack McLam, who publishes the Aid and Abet newsletter and has a center where, of course, the military, military people and police officers can get information about our Constitution and how that Constitution is being eroded and destroyed. You see, we had a wonderful, wonderful country at one time, a country where everyone acknowledged, everybody knew that freedom came from God. That's what it said in our Declaration of Independence. Our Constitution was established to guarantee our God-given liberties. If you read the opening phrases of the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And governments are instituted among men with the consent of the governed to ensure those rights. That's what the government was all about. And that's what the Constitution was all about. It was to limit the power of the government so people could be free. But you see, there have always been those who would establish a dictatorship. There's always those who have lusted after power. And there have always been those who really wanted to establish a world government under the control of a ruling elite. And so they have subverted our Constitution and gradually eroded its chains. As Thomas Jefferson said, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down by the chains of the Constitution. But they've eroded the chains of the Constitution, and they're forging them for the people of this country under the name of fighting terrorism. Oh, we have to fight terrorism. But are we really fighting terrorism? If we were, we would have sealed our borders. We would have armed our airline pilots. They've done everything they could to block that. We would have reinforced the doors on our planes. We would have had marshals on every plane. We would have been checking the cargo going onto the planes for explosives. We would have had equipment on our planes to protect us from shoulder-to-air missiles held by terrorists. We certainly would not have cut back on the funding for the FBI immediately after the 9/1 attack. There's so many things that suggest that the war on terrorism is really not a war on terrorism. It's a war on the American people. If we were really involved in a war on terrorism, we would have continued to fight terrorism after we attacked Iraq. Pardon me, after we attacked Afghanistan, we would have gotten Osama bin Laden, we would have gotten al-Zawahiri, we would have destroyed the leadership of al-Qaeda instead of letting the major man behind al-Qaeda escape. But, of course, no American's going to escape because they're collecting dossiers on us. If you don't believe that, you'll need to get our new newsletter. The Army is collecting dossiers on American citizens. In fact, right now, you want to get on an airplane, if your name's on the list, they won't let you fly. And you have no recourse. Well, Jack McLam is with us, and his organization is trying to get the people in the military and in the police force to understand the Constitution and the fact that liberty and limited government are synonymous. Jack, thank you so much for being with us.
So good to be with you, Brother Stan. Hope all's going well with you.
Well, we're just here 5 hours a day trying to wake people up to the fact that liberty is so readily lost and so hard to regain.
Yeah.
So tell me about the police officers and the military people who are coming to you and asking for help.
Well, we had just a call the other day. Another officer called us, and looks like he may need another attorney because he's been caught with right-wing conservative Christian constitutional materials in his footlocker in his barracks, and so he's in trouble.
All right, fine. Now, is he in the military or is he with the police force?
He's in a police force, state police, down south, and we have several letters came in the last few days about the Fourth Amendment and Fifth Amendment violations, these decisions by the courts that have come in too, brother.
Now, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I guess I'm sure that you covered this on your show, and it's been pretty well discussed over the last week and a half, I guess, when the Fifth Circuit Court came down and gave broad new powers of searching without a warrant to law enforcement. And I have a letter here from an officer, and there's several of them we have. Some of them are in the other office, but it says, Brother Jack, and these are just portions of the letter. Some of them are quite lengthy. Brother Jack, I've spoken to my partner, and we've decided not to push for the search based on our fear of bodily harm, because the Fifth Circuit said if an officer has fear, he has a right to search the dwelling or the business to see if there's any bad guys in there. And, of course, then if he sees anything, then he can seize it and arrest people, file charges on people for whatever he sees once he's in there lawfully, as the judges are saying.
But how can it be there lawfully without a warrant?
Well, this is what the judges just decided, the Fifth Circuit. They said, well, if the officer's afraid and he goes into your business or your home, you know, then he has a right, you know, to talk to you or just say something to you, and he fears that there might be somebody in a room or something, he can search the place without a warrant, even without your permission.
Now, is this under the terrorist laws, or is this simply they're eroding the Constitution?
Yeah,
and
this is just the Fifth Circuit deciding a case. This case was down in Louisiana, and it was a lawsuit filed in Dunham Springs in Louisiana, in New Orleans there. And I guess the Fifth Circuit decided that because these officers were afraid and they searched this place, that it was fine without a warrant because they have a right to provide for their safety. So that means...
Why would they be providing for their safety by searching a place?
Well, I've been in many of these situations, brother, and what this other officer tells me... By the way, I didn't finish that other officer's statement. But anyway, this other officer says, he says, we figure that if an officer is too afraid to do his job, it's not the people's fault, and they shouldn't lose their rights, that this officer should go get another job. And that's true. In law enforcement, we know that we're in a dangerous business, and that doesn't mean that the people should have to give up their rights because we're afraid or we're in a dangerous occupation. But the courts have now decided, the Fifth Circuit has, which means now it's good all over the United States until the Supreme Court picks it up. But then the Supreme Court is going along with some of these things, too. They just violated a base Fifth Amendment right, which we can talk about in a minute. But they say if an officer has to go and talk to you at your home, and the officer feels threatened in some way, and the officer can just say, well, gee, I'm here, and I'm just worried that somebody could be in a back room or something, or in your business, then he has a right to go ahead and search without a warrant.
What we're doing is massively expanding the power of government over the lives of the people.
That's right.
You know, we have this Patriot Act, and one of the most amazing things is I've heard really intelligent, well-informed people say, you know, this Patriot Act has never been used for anything but Islamic terrorism. So I'm doing a study, going through all my files and records, and time after time this legislation is being used, having nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. In fact, the Justice Department is even putting on training courses for prosecutors how they can use the new laws for cases that do not apply to Islamic terrorism. And after all, if it's the law, why shouldn't you be able to use it? And these laws are aimed, in the name of fighting Islamic terrorism, we've got to have the ability to have the same laws for Islamic terrorists we have for other criminal activities. For instance, you know, we certainly should be able to use the same laws for the Islamic terrorists we did for drug pushers. The difficulty is they're using this law for all sorts of things. They're going after people who run clubs in Las Vegas because they don't like them and they want to get their money, or they want to track what they're doing. They're using the anti-terrorist laws for things that having nothing to do with terrorism by massively expanding the power of the federal and of the local governments. And people say, but don't you trust your government? Well, all I can say is, how would you like to have Hillary Clinton have the power that they have today? Because I don't know whether I'm really any more worried about Hillary than I am about the current administration. The current administration has gone after people who have embarrassed them. They went after this Wilson, remember? He was the ambassador who said there really was no threat of buying uranium from some African country. So they outed his wife, who was a CIA agent, and endangered her life by doing it in violation of the law. But they're going to investigate and find out about that. Right. Find out who in the Bush administration authorized them to violate the law. And anybody who believes they're going to find anything is sadly mistaken. And they've threatened people, like Sybil Edmonds, who had worked for the FBI, and found out that there was all sorts of evidence that the FBI had before the September 11th attack, that the terrorists were planning on using airplanes. They were targeting the buildings in New York and other cities. And she's been threatened with imprisonment if she ever reveals any specifics about what she knows. So they're using some obscure law and the state security laws, and anybody who works for government who speaks out will be thrown in prison, and they'll throw away the key. At least that's what they're telling them.
Well, that's what they did to me in Phoenix to arrest me. I was a police officer there and was the most highly decorated officer in the history of Phoenix, Arizona. And Brother Stan, then I became the most fired because I kept defending people's constitutional rights and wouldn't be what they call a team player and wouldn't cover up for immorality or unlawful orders and so forth or corruption. And then they arrested me after I was medically retired for injuries in the line of duty. I was speaking at a gun show, and I wear, of course, my old police uniform decorated up the way I like it. And it doesn't look original at all, but they went back to 1935. They saw me at the gun show underneath a banner that said, "Police believe in the Second Amendment, and we will not take your guns away," and a few other signs. And on a Sunday, the chief got into the office, and they went back through the law books and found a 1935 law that they could arrest me under for impersonating a police officer. Well, my badge says retired, and I tell everybody I'm retired Officer Jack McLam. But, that's what they do. And here's an officer that says here, he's in trouble. He says, "Once again, I shot my mouth off at the wrong time, and now I'm up for a review." He was talking about the Fourth and Fifth Amendment destruction by the Supreme Court and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Brother Stan. And he says, "My sergeant told me that I should look for another job if I can't obey the laws and decisions of the courts are making." And then another one says here, he says, "Things are changing very fast here in our department. Now, on a stop, we can get a citizen to incriminate himself, and it's legal." He says, "We are being given huge powers we have never had before. I'm deeply concerned about my children and their children's future." He says, "If this continues, they'll have no freedoms as we have experienced." And on and on and on. We have good cops out there and good soldiers, brother, that are just frustrated to see the direction America's going. There's another one here. I haven't finished his letter. I was reading tonight, trying to answer it. He said, "How can the American people believe that Bush is taking our rights away from us and going to give freedom to the Iraqis?" And so these cops and soldiers are thinking. Some of them have a brain, and they're beginning to think and figure, hey, this is the wrong direction America's going. And, of course, that's what we do here, 16 hours a day as volunteers for the last 23 years, and that's answer letters and educate police and soldiers about their duties to say no to tyranny, say no to immoral orders, no to illegal violations of their oath or just flat criminal activities, which officers are involved in sometimes. I know I got another letter from another police officer here not too long ago, and he says that he's being ostracized, and I'm looking at his letter here, for refusing to go along with a cover-up for a mistake which violated a person's guns rights. He says, "At least I think it was a mistake. I could not put down in my report something that was not true, which would have protected our town government from suit and the officers who violated the man's rights from being sued. I wanted to help, but I could not do it. He says, I'm very saddened in a way, believing now that I may have ended my chance for advancement in my department, possibly worse than that. A Constable H, we don't put their names in the newsletter if they're active duty because they have enough heat coming down on them, but he's in the northwest part of the United States. So there are good officers and soldiers standing up, saying no to tyranny all the time. They're getting in trouble. And it just breaks your heart, brother, to see them fired or even being set up for criminal charges because they've said no or they know something that they're going to tell and testify to, and then they find their locker filled with marijuana or something. They get charged with a crime. It's just unbelievable what's going on right now, Brother Stan.
Well, when you have a nation that's turned its back on God, and when the good people do nothing, and when the churches are not involved, when the ministers are not speaking out against the corruption at every level of our society, why would we be surprised at what's happened?
Yes.
When the churches refused to speak out, when back in 1962 the Supreme Court took God and prayer, and then subsequently the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and the churches were just deafening in their silence. The ministers didn't want to be controversial, without realizing, of course, they had an obligation to speak out against it. Certainly, even the group of it's Conference of State Supreme Court Justices in 1958. Got together, and these were the Supreme Court justices of the 48 states at that time, and they said what the Supreme Court is doing is wrong. This judicial activism is going to destroy our Constitution. The ministers wouldn't speak out. And, of course, the trouble was nobody ever heard what the Supreme Court justices, state Supreme Court justices, said about how the federal Supreme Court was violating our Constitution. There was no basis for those decisions other than to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, and the people went right along with it.
Amen, brother. That's right. And even today, because of the entanglement, we call them here at our Police and Military Association government churches, because they're run by the government and they're under government jurisdiction. They're not under God anymore because of their state corporations and their 501c3s. These ministers are agents of the government, and they can't preach the full word of God or the government comes crashing down on them.
Well, they're going to go after them if they make a political statement of any sort. Yeah. I know one of my friends had called, who had a 501c status, and he called President Clinton a crook. That was after he had been impeached by the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
And the IRS came around and said, you can't call the president a crook. And he said, well, the House of Representatives called him a crook. And he said, well, but you can't because you have a 501c3.
Right.
And they took it away from him, and it caused all sorts of problems. That's one reason we're not 501c3. We want to be able to tell the truth. And unfortunately, most 501c3 ministries are afraid to do that, at least as far as what's happening politically.
They sure are. Yeah. I remember Tex Mars sending me a list that the government gave him, the IRS gave him, of things he couldn't talk about, you know. And it was quite an extensive list. Of course, he's not church, but he was doing broadcast and had a 501c3, and he finally had to get rid of his, you know, so he could say anything he wanted to say. But I remember I went through with, who's that, Dr. Everett Sullivan. You remember about 15 years ago, 18 years ago, when Dr. Everett Sullivan was a Baptist minister up in North Dakota, and they came in and padlocked his church and arrested the moms and dads and him, put him in jail because he would not use in their Christian school NEA-approved books to teach the children. And the judge told him in court, the state court judge said to him, preacher, do you have a 501c3? He said, yeah. He says, preacher, do you have a state charter corporation? He says, oh, yes, sir, Your Honor. He says, well, then we can come in, and this is in his book that he wrote, and we could burn your church down if we wanted to because you're a state church.
And I think the
minister almost fell out of the behind the podium there. He couldn't believe it. So when he found out and he did the research, he found out it was true.
We'll be right back here in just a few moments with our special friend, Jack McClam, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. I've heard a very, very similar story, Jack, about a minister who was getting into all sorts of trouble because of what he was doing and saying. So he went to see the judge, and the judge said, well, you know, everything you say about your rights under the Constitution and the First Amendment, they're all absolutely true. But the trouble is, since you are a 501c3 church, you do not have those rights. You are not covered by the religious protections under the First Amendment because you're an agent of the state. Yeah. And the minister had no realization that once he took a 501c3 status, he had lost his ability to say whatever he wanted to freely. And then the judge said, I'm sorry, I agree with you. But you are a corporation, you are no longer a church. And the ministers have no idea. They're not told this in their schools. They're told by their lawyers, oh, you want to be incorporated, because the lawyers just love to draw up those papers. But I fault the seminaries for not educating our ministers so that they can speak freely about the important issues of our day. And yet, of course, in the seminaries, they're told, oh, you don't want to talk about that. Your only job is to save souls. Well, you know, there is a gentleman named David Horowitz who was raised in a communist family. And he told my good friend, Colonel Ron Ray. Colonel Ron Ray had been on a commission that David Horowitz had addressed. And after the commission meeting, why, Colonel Ray asked David Horowitz, what about their effort to undermine the foundations of our country? And he said, we have undermined every one of your major foundations except the military. We thought we could destroy the military in Vietnam. When we found we couldn't, then we went after getting women and homosexuals into the military because we knew that would eventually demoralize it. And Colonel Ray said to him, but what about the churches? Oh, he said, that was the easiest thing that we did. And one of the things we did was to get into the seminaries and teach the ministers that they should never talk about anything other than just saving souls.
Yeah.
And so they neutralized the church. And, of course, then they began to change the message and the music of our churches, and they've done a great job there as well.
Yes. Brother Stan, do you carry David Horowitz's wonderful book, Radical Son?
No, I don't.
Oh, boy, that's a fantastic book that he wrote exposing. Basically, what he did is he exposed that Joseph McCarthy was 100% correct, because it's his family history of him growing up in a communist family. He talks about the schools being run by his mom and dad, who were communists, and other communists in the United States. And, man, he just exposes so much. The book's called Radical Son. He wrote it about 10 years ago.
I have a copy. We don't carry it for sale.
But every family ought to read that, because we've been told, and our law enforcement and military people come up with this all the time, Jack, communism is dead. Are you guys a bunch of dummies around there? So I wish every family could read David Horowitz's expose on basically, as we say it around here, that Joseph McCarthy was right. As a matter of fact, he didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg.
And we are becoming a socialist nation. We're losing our freedom, just as they did in Russia, because we have people in key positions in government who are not unfriendly to this idea of an authoritarian society, which is what communism really is. This idea of redistributing the wealth, and sharing the wealth, that is simply for the theoreticians. Communism basically is an elitist system with a very, very powerful ruling elite, police force that monitors everybody else, and then the establishment of feudal society where everybody is under the control and oppression of the government. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Jack McLam of Aiden Abet Newsletter, and we were simply talking about communism during the break, and the fact that this idea that communism is dead is really totally fallacious. That's what they want you to believe, and yet there's communism in Russia today. Putin is from the KGB, KGB is still under communist control. The military is still under communist control. The parliament's under communist control. A couple of the people who are going to run against Putin in the last election just mysteriously disappeared. Oh, shucks. Well, I'll tell you, an awful lot of people in Russia realize what's happening, and they really don't care. They want the stability of an all-powerful state, the way things were. And you see, don't they value their freedom? Well, you don't value your freedom until you get that knock at the door in the middle of the night and you are whisked off to the Siberian, a prison camp where you'll spend the rest of your life. But the Russian people, the younger people, really have never understood what this is all about. Is communism dead? Well, we have 1.25 billion people living in communist China. We have people living in communist Vietnam and communist North Korea and communist Cuba. And although the American people don't want to recognize it, the government we brought to power in Rhodesia is communist. The government we brought to power in South Africa is communist. The government we brought to power in Southwest Africa is communist. The government in Angola is communist. But the American people have no idea. Our government is promoting communism throughout the world, not fighting communism. And if you understand that we've promoted communism since its inception, if you want the documentation, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And we have so many other books that will point out how the United States and American financiers and the Federal Reserve System financed communism from its very inception, creating the best enemy American money could buy. So right today, the communist movement here in the United States is pushing socialism and pushing many of the policies that are being enacted by the Bush administration, but they back the policies enacted by the Clinton administration. Their goal is to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and to pass amendments. In fact, I think this new amendment they're talking about on gay marriage simply gives the federal government power over marriage, which it should never have.
Right.
Well, Jack, though, you talk to these people out across America. How do the soldiers feel about the war over in Iraq?
Well, I think we get letters from police officers, but boy, I'll tell you, we sure are getting the letters from those that have been over in Gulf War II, and or either from there. We've got this one that's a sergeant in a police department, but he was over there, and he flat out in his letter up. Pulling it out right here. It says, President Bush has lied about the activities of Saddam to get us into his war for oil. This is a soldier that's a police officer in the northwest part of the United States now, but he just got back a short time ago. He says, the same as his father did against Saddam to get us into the Gulf War. What's new? He said, at least I got home from this one alive. No worries. He says, these lies, of course, he doesn't realize he's going back soon. As they rotate him in and out. He says these lies will only erode his approval rating among those who can think independently and those who are not Christian. You at Aid and Abet said it first. Christians will likely not abandon their earthly king. We're talking about George Bush. Christians, once he said that Jesus was his favorite philosopher, Christians went back in their prayer closets and forgot all about him. But anyway, he says, thank God he's not worried about winning his re-election at this point. What worries this law enforcement officers and veteran soldier and should worry every thinking American is if Bush and associates do get worried about his re-election and feel it may require another massive terrorist attack on our fellow Americans, he says, stand by for incoming Sergeant Mel, duty station in the northeast part of the United States. And we're getting these letters all the time. I could go on and on. Here's an airman, a U.S. airman. He's talking about we're not being told, even though the numbers are high, about how many injured soldiers we have here. We see them coming and going. The word is from the front line guys, this is a more real war now than in the early months of our involvement there. U.S. Air Force airman somewhere in the Middle East right now. And the letters just keep coming in, brother. A lot of them over there are waking up to what's really happening. They're not there to fight terrorism at all. And a lot of them are coming home sick from depleted uranium. We're hearing from these guys. And it's really sad.
Now, have you actually talked to some of the people who are damaged by the depleted uranium and those bombs and missiles we've been using?
Yes. Right.
We'll talk more about that when we get back here in just a moment. Our guest is Jack McLam from the Aid and Abet organization. That's his newsletter. We'll tell you in a few minutes how to get it. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call. If you have a question or comment, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jack McLam. And what a tragedy today. We hear another 11 Marines killed in an ambush, and how many were injured, we don't know. And, of course, the uprising of the Shia Muslims in the South. And what's happening, we're generating hatred by the Muslims against the West, against America and everything we stand for. And at the same time, we're seeing a growing anger and frustration on the part of the American people against the Muslims. And that's how you get a major world war going. You get the people on both sides to hate one another. And this is a planned program, and we only have to go back to the time of the September 11th bombing. There was an editorial in the U.S. News and World Report, and I included that in my September 2001 newsletter. You want to get it, pull it down off the Internet in September 2001. The editorial was all about how we had to learn to hate in America. If we couldn't hate in America, why we'd never be able to be effective in this war against terrorism. And hatred was the most important attribute we could develop. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, what in heaven's name is this about? Well, if you read Samuel Huntington's book, The Class of Civilizations, where he says, unless we hate what we are not, we cannot love what we are. Unless we hate what we are not, we cannot love what we are. Read the books, Samuel Huntington's book. They want this hatred. This is what provokes wars. This is what will provoke the next war. Anthony Lake's book, Six Crises, published in 2000. He was a major security advisor. He talks about this hatred that has to develop. And this is, we're being manipulated. Until the American people understand we are being manipulated, they want us to hate the Islamic people just as they want the Islamic people to hate America. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. In fact, all across the Islamic world, increased animosity and hatred towards America. And this, I believe, will be what will usher in the next war, great war. And the one thing is Christians must not fall into this trap. Would you agree with that, Jack?
I believe that's absolutely true, brother. Our letters are coming in from our soldiers over there. One we got just a short time ago, this officer was, our soldier, he wasn't an officer, but non-commissioned officer, he was talking about now they have the soldiers getting sick because they're handling their shoulder-fired rifles now. They're giving depleted uranium shells, and the soldiers, not just the ones shooting the tanks or cleaning up the messes or breathing in the powdered...
Hold that thought for a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jack McLam, and he was talking about how many of our soldiers over in Iraq are getting sick because of the depleted uranium. And the government knows that this will be lethal eventually for many of the civilians over there and for many of our military people. But the trouble is, they really don't care. The idea is not to protect your soldiers. The idea is to win the war. After all, what's an army for? It's to kill and to destroy. That's the purpose of an army, is to win the battle. And the depleted uranium products, the shells, the bullets, the bombs, the missiles, they're very effective in destroying the enemy. The trouble is that the uranium oxide dust that is a byproduct of this is inhaled. Most of our soldiers, or many of our soldiers, are now coming home and they're ill from this. And many of the people who got contact with the depleted uranium during the first Gulf War are dying today. But you're not hearing about that. The military's blocked this out because they want to continue using this lethal weapon. Lethal not only for the enemy, but for the civilians and for American soldiers. Pick up that story, Jack.
Yeah, Brother Stan, my wife is one of those people. She was in the Gulf War I, and she almost died. She's had a number of her friends that served with her there in the Gulf War. She was in Saudi Arabia in the Gulf War, and even over in the areas there in Bosnia, she served over there, and they used and handed around these depleted uranium shells. And so she almost died, but she's lost a number of her friends who went over there with her. And she's through holistic health treatments and purifying her liver and the blood and everything for literally years. She's got residual problems, health problems. She's 50% disabled now. She spent 22 years in the military, and she was shocked that when she got sick, the government, when she'd go into the medical facilities for the soldiers, they would say she'd have a psychiatric problem, and they wouldn't treat her for it. So, praise God, just before she passed away, as she was still in the military down in Tucson, serving as an air traffic control master sergeant, had 30 people under her, she was just about wasted away, and a Christian family there took her in and started cleansing her with all kinds of cleanses, and she began to come back to life, and that's been 13 years ago, and she's very involved in the Gulf War movement. She'll be leaving in 2 weeks to go back to Washington to attend the Gulf War Sickness Conference back there, and so we hear from these soldiers, and I'll tell you right now, there's very few of them that are not coming in contact with this 238 uranium, because right. They're being given these shells, and or either they're going in and checking for bodies and checking the scenes where they've blown up tanks and other vehicles and buildings with this 238 uranium. So
I think
it's going to be an absolute catastrophe, because we lost over 10,000 soldiers, according to my wife, and the Gulf War people in the Gulf War One. So how many are we going to lose this time when we dumped about 20 times more tonnage of this depleted uranium over there than they did the first time?
Now, those are not people killed in battle. Those are people who died as a result of the toxicity of the poison gas, the vaccines, and the depleted uranium they encountered, and the experimental vaccines that were given to our boys, and they're dying. Thousands and thousands of them have died, and the government's covering that up.
Yes,
and if they can cover that up, what else are they covering up and lying to the American people about?
That's right, and people that believe, as the soldiers over there are writing to us and saying, if people believe that George Bush is over there going to give freedom to these people, and they're taking it away from us here in America, enslaving us, is pretty radical to think that way.
Well, let's tell our listeners how they can get your newsletter and get in touch with your ministry. Before, you know, we usually get so involved in talking that I forget to ask you that. And I think people, many listeners out there who have friends or relatives in either the police force or the military, would want to get your information. So would you like to tell them how they can reach you?
That'd be fine, Brother Stan. Yes, we're all volunteers here, our police and soldiers. At Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter is our publication, Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter. But it's just as easy to just write a capital A and the little and sign and another capital A, Brother Stan, and send it to our police and military organization here. And it is HC, like Hotel Charlie, 11, Box 357, Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. That's HC11, Box 357, Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. And we have the letters I was just reading to you tonight are right there in the newsletter from these officers and soldiers. We put a lot of their letters in there and other articles about what's going on, and about, we have one in here about the depleted uranium problem, and so they'll read what the officers and soldiers are concerned about today. The next issue, of course, will have the Fourth Amendment, the removal of our Fourth Amendment and Fifth Amendment by the courts just recently, and believe me, we're going to have some articles and letters in there from soldiers and police about that, especially the police. And so people can get that. If they don't have any money, we'll send it to them for free, because this is a just a volunteer movement here of police and soldiers. But Brother Stan, if they could send us a few bucks for an issue of it, we'd appreciate it, because we need the money to reprint and to pay the postage. So
I know exactly what you mean. Let's go to is this Mike calling or is this Jim?
Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
One question on the
Where are you calling from, Mike?
Santa Cruz.
Okay, fine.
The rounds they're firing, are they shooting now rifle rounds that are made from the depleted uranium?
Yeah, they're special rounds. They're not every time they fire, they all don't carry these with them, but they're special rounds, just like we carry in the police department here for penetration. You know, you have maybe somebody behind a piece of metal or something, you can get these depleted uranium rounds, and they have them to use, and whoever carries them is in trouble. And they could put those in and fire those, and boy, they'll penetrate right through metal and get the enemy behind the piece of metal or some specific case like that. So the troops are handling this stuff too, these depleted uranium bullets and projectiles. It's not just the choppers anymore, the you know, the Cobras and the other choppers there, and it's not just the tanks, but now the soldiers themselves are being given these missiles to use, you know.
I think, Jack, it's so important people understand what depleted uranium is, because when you say depleted uranium, you think, well, then they've probably taken all the uranium out. The thing is, they haven't taken all the uranium out. They have taken out the 235, uranium-235, which is less than 1%. All the rest of it is solid uranium.
Yep.
It's uranium-238, which has a completely different type of emission. And once that gets into your system, you're constantly bombarded for the next 4 billion years with these alpha particles, and they can be disastrous for your health. And we've had Dr. Major Rocky on our program several times. He was in charge of 100 men, and his job during the first Gulf War was to clean up the various tanks and armored personnel vehicles, American vehicles that had been hit by friendly fire. And they worked at that, and of the men who worked with him trying to clean up those tanks and armored personnel carriers, at least I've read one article that up to 30 of the 100 are now dead.
Wow, terrible. But, you know, we must understand that these soldiers, just like my wife, we've got friends that have come back from Gulf War One who has infected their whole family. There's one sergeant that she knew who was there at Kamacia, and he was the NBC sergeant. And he told them, don't blow up those bunkers because they have nuclear and biological shells in them. And they blew it up anyway, and 500,000 of our troops had this rain down on them. And he brought the sickness home to his wife and children, and all of them have had several operations. And we haven't heard from him for a couple years. We hope he's still alive. But my wife and tells me that so many of these guys and gals come back and pass it on to their families.
Well,
so
I think that's probably
what's happening.
I really, Jack, I think that is probably the infections, the mycoplasma infections, because we know about 40, according to the the Rockefeller Committee report, which we do carry, came out of the Veterans Administration, signed by Senator Rockefeller. About 40% of the wives of the people with Gulf War syndrome, 40% of their wives came down ill. So I think that's probably a mycoplasma. I don't think that's depleted uranium. I think it's multiple causes. I think that the experimental vaccines they used, the mycoplasma and some of the vaccines, and that may have been a part of the experiment. The depleted uranium, the toxic fumes from the Gulf fires, the sarin gas, which they actually intentionally blew that up, knowing full well it was going to damage our people. But what better way to destroy a great nation than destroy its fighting men and their courage and destroy their health? This is what happened to Rome. They killed so many people in their multiple wars, there was nobody left to fight. This is what's wrong with France today. They've had so many wars, they've lost so many of the brave men. All that's left are cowards, and the same thing is true in Italy. Very, very few truly courageous people. The courageous people all died in the wars. The wars are the worst things you can do. So why are we embarking on imperialistic wars? Because that's what this war is about. So anything else you want to say, Mike?
Just one more thing. If he could get some of the the rifle rounds back, I know it's hard to get the tank rounds, but if he could get some of the 223 rounds back to where people could look at them and study them, because I'm sure they'll deny that they have depleted uranium.
Well, I'm sure that they know. There are people really working at it full-time. We're going to have Lorraine Murray with us on Friday evening at 9 o'clock. You want to be sure to be listening, okay?
So put out the word, send some rounds back.
God bless. Bye-bye. Right. Let's go to Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Jim had called from Richland, Washington. I don't know how we lost him, but if he wants to call back, we'll try to get him before the end of the program. Roger, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you, please, gents. Two, if you please. Right next door here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, you probably all heard of this somewhat nationwide prominence Herco case. I assume you have, and I expect, of course, it hasn't gotten quite enough nationwide
press.
You're
talking about the Herco case.
Herco, H-I-R-K-O.
Oh, Herco. I don't know that. Tell me about
it.
Yeah,
well, they settled out of court in one of these, that is the city of Bethlehem, did for just under $10 million. Could have gone to 20 or
what,
because it was one of these home level drug bust SWAT raids. They filled them full of 11 bullets. I guess they were afraid the guy was going to twitch while he was dying, so they didn't want that to happen. But it was
they went the wrong home.
No, they got the right home, but they used excessive force, and the family, etc., sued. And thankfully won, unfortunately, for the citizens of Bethlehem. Did you have any thoughts on that case, Jack?
Sadly, there's so many of these cases today that we hear about here that the public never hears about. This is not unusual whatsoever. It's happening all over the country. The officers are being given greater latitude, and they're going into homes or... they're just doing some horrific things that we hear about here that never make it big like the Herco case did, you know. But I just say that it's this one case has hit the media, and there's so many of them that we know about and are going on now, and going to be a lot more with this new weakening of the Fourth and Fifth Amendment here, especially the Fourth Amendment, where they can go in and just if the officer makes a decision he fears in fear, that they can search your homes and your businesses without any warrants. So we're losing our freedoms very quickly. We have a lot of police officers out there very concerned about that, and that's what we do here, try to get them to take a stand and say no. Of course, the minute they do, they're not a team player, and they become a pariah in the department. But more and more are saying no, and we're getting their letters in here, and they're standing as the salt in the life, like they're in the department trying to say, and the one wrote to us a couple months ago, said he flat out told the other officers that we're going to do something illegal and violate a person's rights to do an attitude adjustment, is what they called it, which all cops know about, because the guy had a bad attitude, and he said absolutely not, and if you guys do it, I'm going to turn you in, I'm going to squeal. Well, his career potential was over, of course, because he wouldn't let him to do this. He'll never get promoted if he doesn't get fired.
Well, on that note, I want to quickly and then last ask you on the, like you mentioned, the officer earlier that had got caught with the constitutional literature in his locker.
Yeah.
Aren't there any older mossbacks, sometimes they're called, fellows that are there to stand by in the gap for him, or typically is that the case, and God bless?
Okay, brother. No, the old mossbacks are pretty much gone. You know, our problem is these police officers for the last 30 years have gone through the same government socialist humanist training in the government school systems, and boy, we educate them all the time and send them materials, but you should see some of the answers we get back from them. They have no idea about the Constitution and so forth, and so 30 years ago these old mossbacks started retiring, you know, and I've been gone 18 years and I'm no longer there to be on these guys' back, and Officer Rick Dalton's gone, and so as we retire out and they bring these, God forbid you have officers taking the job today that are college graduates, because they've had 16 years of socialist and communist training, and this new situational ethics where everything is right, everything is okay as long as it promotes the goal, the situational ethics of the unjustifies the means political philosophy is being taught in the academies now. So watch out. The Herco case is one case in thousands, and there's more coming, because we're just we have no leadership anymore that believes in God and believes in the constitutional republic. And so brother, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't see it getting any better, but we just have to pray and do all we can to awaken as many people as possible.
Don't you think that a lot of officers feel it's sort of us against them, these people out there, and we're risking our lives every day. We're trying to maintain law and order. We've got to have more power so that we can do a good job and protect the people. And in the process of doing that, they're taking away what makes life really worthwhile. They're taking away the freedom of the people that they're sworn to protect.
Yes, we keep hammering them in our publication, constitutional publication, that once they have all the power, look around at your children and grandchildren because they're slaves at that time.
And, Chris, what people have forgotten is that liberty and limited government are synonymous, that tyranny and total government are synonymous. The plan was laid out by Plato in the Republic, and it's being carried out today by people who believe that Plato was right. We need a ruling elite, we need a massive military, and then everybody else to be enslaved. What they're talking about is a return to a feudalistic society, and it's coming rapidly right here in once free America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jack McClam, and what we're talking about is the idea that America was founded as a Christian nation. Now, people won't tell you that anymore, but the whole idea of this country was our freedoms came from God, different than any other country in the world. And we talk about the opening phrase of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, which held that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and governments are instituted among men that to preserve those rights with the consent of the governed. That's what government was about. That's why they wrote the Constitution as they did. They didn't talk about God because it was presumed that our freedoms came from God. You didn't have to talk about it. Everybody knew of these ideas came out of the Christian religion. But they sure don't teach that in school anymore, do they, Jack?
They certainly don't, brother. They certainly don't. You know, we here have a saying at Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter, duty is ours, consequences are God's. We just need to tell the American people it's time to just do our duty. You know what your duty is. You have to stand up and speak out against unrighteousness and let God sort it out. We don't have to win this thing, Brother Stan. God just says we have to take the field of battle. If we don't win it, God will clean house when he gets here, but we got to be on the field challenging God's enemies at every point. We haven't been doing that.
And the trouble is that the enemies of God are in key positions in government today. How did they get there? Well, they accumulated great wealth. They control the media. And if you doubt this, why, we'll be glad to send you a copy of Richard Harwood's article, October 1993, in the Washington Post. Richard Harwood was the ombudsman for the Washington Post, and he talks about the Council on Foreign Relations, the closest thing we have to a ruling elite, tells how they control the government during the Clinton administration. They control the right and the left wings of the media. And as he said, the media doesn't report the news. It simply makes the news come about, makes the events come about. So it's time the American people understood where we stand today. We have two political parties, both dedicated to globalism, both dedicated to war, both dedicated to world government. And it's about time the American people understood what's going on. Jack McClam, thank you so much for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure having you.
Brother Stan, thank you for all you do out there. We love you here at Aid and Abet, and we thank you for our kids and grandkids for standing up and speaking out.
And I'm so glad to hear there's a little station up there in Kamei that's rebroadcasting our program. Is
that
right?
That's right. Sure is, brother, and it's wonderful. For the first time, it's not just country and western music up here. Praise the Lord. We're starting to see a big reaction to talk radio up here like the Dan Solomon Show. Thanks a lot,
brother.
Good night.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every weekday. Of course, on the weekends, we get a little vacation. We only do a couple of programs. We have one program although it's pre-recorded, reaches 35 stations. We are a voice, I believe, for sanity in a world gone mad. So if you believe that there truly is a spiritual battle taking place today, that as there has always been, there have been those who've lusted after power and those who've lusted after righteousness. And that conflict is going on today. And tragically, those who left after righteousness are losing because the wicked people have gained control of the reins of power, gained control of the media, gained control of great wealth, and they control the great tax-exempt foundations. I mean, who do you think funds the illegal immigration movement? It's the Ford Foundation, who funded Kinsey and his effort to destroy the moral fabric of our society and promote the ideas of Hugh Hefner. Why, that was the Rockefeller Foundation. If you doubt that, why, we have the book Importing Revolution going into the Ford Foundation, funding of the illegal immigration movement. It's also covered in the video, The Conquest of Aztland. For the Rockefeller Foundation, funding the moral depravity in this country, covering the book called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And we don't get on the radio and just talk about things we can't verify. We've been studying this for over 42 years. And we have a pretty good grasp about what's going on, and our job is to try to get you to understand so that when we're not here, why you can begin to continue to let people understand what America was. I look upon it sort of like Camelot. America was the ideal society. It was the greatest society in the world. It was the city on the hill. It was the hope of the world. And I'm reminded of the words of the king in Camelot as he spoke to this boy who wanted to go into the final battle with him. And, of course, the king knew he would be killed, and he knew that many of his army would be killed, but he had to enter the battle. And he tells the boy, no, you cannot enter the battle with us. You must survive and go back and tell the people that that it would never be forgot that once there was a spot that was known as Camelot. And I often think of those words as I think of America, the dream that we had, a place where men could truly be free. And we're losing that dream because people don't even understand what that dream was all about today. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So if you believe that there is a problem and you'd like to join us in this truly epic struggle for the survival of Western civilization, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and if you get our March newsletter, you'll find out what happened at the secret meetings, the cabinet meetings in the White House in January and February of 2001. That was, of course, 8 to 9 months before the September 11th attack. What were they talking about? Will you be surprised? Of course, we simply quote from The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill, the Secretary of Treasury who attended those meetings. We'll tell you what the head of the former NSA, the former head of the NSA, Lieutenant General William Odom, wrote in his book about intelligence, about the CIA and assassinations, about the CIA having journalists planted in the media to control what you think. The information's there, but of course it's hidden in plain sight. Our job is to get the information to you and hope that you'll care enough about freedom that you'll join us in this effort to save our once great nation. But as Jack said so well, a duty is ours, the results of the Lord's. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day there, 4 hours a day on shortwave. Tell others about our program. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And this evening we have with us Faye Hall. And Faye was a student in China at the time of the Communist Revolution. I'm talking about Tiananmen Square. And she was brought up in China. She, of course, lived there with her family. Her family had come to the United States, but she was there at the time of the Tiananmen Square uprising. And, well, I'm going to let her tell her story of how she was participated in the demonstrations, how God intervened, and of course she wasn't there on the day when the tanks rolled in. They knew the tanks were rolling in, but they didn't really believe that the government would ever simply slaughter large numbers of young students. Faye, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Faye, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, fine. Are you on a regular telephone?
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, now let's talk a little bit about you were raised in China. And how old were you at the time of the Tiananmen Square uprising?
I was 19 years old and a sophomore in my college.
All right. Were you studying to be a doctor, or what were you studying?
Right. I'm supposed to be a medical doctor.
All right, fine. And so then what was the feeling towards America? What was this feeling at that time? This was, of course, the 1989. What was the feeling about this idea of freedom over there? Did the people want to have freedom? Did they want to get away from the authoritarian rule, brutal rule that had been in place for so long?
Yeah. It was actually a really brief time of excitement and just dreams come true and We're actually very naive, but I remember I was just so excited thinking democracy is coming, you know, liberty, all that good stuff, yeah.
As you learned about these in college, where did you get the ideas? Because they certainly weren't prevalent in the general society. Was it primarily the students that had this feeling about this idea that freedom was coming? Or?
Yeah, actually, you know, I think it's really in people's hearts, you know, and especially we went through Cultural Revolution.
Now, you were there at the time of the Red Guard in the early 60s then?
Yes, my parents, like, impact right there. They were actually the Red Guards, you know.
Your parents were the Red Guards?
Yes, and they were in the top university in China where the Cultural Revolution started is where they were at. Tsinghua University.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were, my parents' generation, they were ambitious, they had all these dreams in communist, okay? At that time, they really believed in communist, and that dream just shadowed, and when they graduated from university, they were sent to, like, the most rural part of China, like, northwest part of China. Like, my dad was a top physics student.
Your father?
Yes.
All right.
And after he graduated, they sent him to do the mine work underground. So
he had to be a miner.
Yes, yes.
All right. And what about your mother?
My mother had to work in a chemical factory, when she was pregnant with me. She has all these poisoning things in the chemical factory.
All right, for our listeners out there who really don't remember that era, of course, after the communists came to power in the 1949-1950, and then, of course, Chairman Mao consolidated his power. In the early 1960s, to create even more of a state of fear because it already killed countless millions of people by the early 1960s. He turned the groups of students on anybody who had an education. And suddenly, if you had an education, mm-hmm. you were a potential enemy of the state. So here they're taking this man graduating from college, top physics, what do? They send him out to work in a mine, and they tend his wife to work in a chemical factory, and they take the professors from the universities, and they drive them out, and they beat them, and they destroy many of the libraries, and so much was just destroyed. Everything was to create fear, and everybody had to confess that, that they had revolutionary thoughts, and anybody who, didn't, everything was, you will renounce capitalism, you will renounce your thoughts, you will simply pledge your allegiance to the state. Is that a pretty good analysis of it?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty impressed, how much you know about the China Cultural Revolution and all that. Yeah, but it wasn't a story. It was just a living nightmare for everybody. Everybody in China, it was impacting.
But if the student groups were going around, the Red Guards, and they were just anybody who was a representative, maybe they were a pianist, maybe they were a concert pianist, they'd break their fingers, destroy their piano, and everything was almost like total destruction of existing society.
Yeah, it was just madness. Unbelievable. It's like now you think back, how can somebody do something so silly or so crazy?
Or evil.
But there was like billions of people all stuck into this. It was unbelievable.
All right, now, how did your parents then get out of China after the Red Guard?
After the Cultural Revolution, my dad, because his background in the physics, he was able to get back to the university through lots of, selection. He was picked through all kinds of exams. So he went back to Tsinghua University and finished his master program, and he was sent to United States as a scholar.
So with the idea he would go back to China?
Right.
And, of course, he didn't want to go back to China. Did they keep you there then as a student, sort of as a hostage, so he would have to return?
Well, it's actually at that time it's both sides. China didn't want me and my mom to leave, and the United States really that was actually the case, and it wasn't easy to get visa anyway.
Did your mother get out at the same time as your father?
No, it was about like 4 years after my dad left. And I was left behind in China, yeah.
All right, so your mother and father had come to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And was it Tiananmen Square in 1988 or 1989?
That was 1989.
All right, well, you remember it better than I do. Anyway, you were there. You were a student, a pre-medical student or a medical student,
mm-hmm.
At the university there. And everybody was thinking, isn't it wonderful? Now we're going to have freedom, democracy.
Right.
And these ideas were rampant among the students. And I remember seeing pictures of them where they'd have pictures of the Statue of Liberty, or they'd have big posters, and they'd say, Marxism, no, and Abraham Lincoln, yes. These ideas of America, this idea that a place where people could be free, was that sort of your idea of what you really wanted in China, the freedoms that we have here in America?
Right. At that time, I think people really have this admiration towards America. It's just like that's where we want to be, Yeah, it was a really, really neat time. It was short, but actually it wasn't just the students. It was the whole city, all different kind of walk of people. So when we were through that demonstration those few months, right, there was no police working on the street, direct traffic, and everything was shut down, but through that whole month, there was never robbery. There was no traffic accident. Everybody, all different walks of people, just really participate and with the same dream we had. Yeah.
Well, so what happened? Were you attending the rallies there at that big square? Was that in Beijing that we saw the pictures where they had this big square and all the demonstrations?
Right, that's the Tiananmen Square in Beijing, yes.
All right. So you were there until, what, about 2 days before the tanks actually rolled in?
Yes, yes. We were there. We did lots of walk from the university to the center of the city, demonstration. We sing songs. We listen to speeches, and there are people on a hunger strike, you know, just lots and lots of things are happening, and there are so many people was on, like, just, you know, like, hunger strike, and there was a citizen of the city would just come and give students the food, you know, we were, like, camping out at the Tiananmen Square, but, like, 2 days before that massacre happened, we were actually, we were told that the military is coming and the tanks are coming. They were on the outskirts of the city. But we were just thinking they're going to throw some tear gas, you know. So the leader was training us how to protect ourselves from tear gas. I remember learning how to dip the handkerchief wet and wrap around your mouth and nose, and that's how you protect yourself in tear gas.
No, you really felt that if anything happened, they would use tear gas on you. You never imagined they'd use the tanks and to run the people over, and mm-hmm. Did they machine gun the people when they finally brought the military units in?
Well, actually, I wasn't there on those 2 days. It was just quite miraculously. Even to today, I don't know why I had to go out of town, but somehow I got called out of town like 2 days prior. So actually, it was on the train I heard the massacre, but I have really close friends who were there that night, and I have relatives with the, in the city. There was machine gun shots, and I was told there are these military soldiers coming out of the town, and they seemed like they didn't know anything, and almost like on drugs or something.
Well, I had heard that the local military officers and men would not fire on the Chinese.
Right,
so
right.
They brought them in from another completely different area.
Yep.
That was the only way they could get them to kill other Chinese. And it's the same way here in the United States. You know, they've done surveys on Americans, Marines, to find out if they would fire on American soldiers, and only 25% said that they would fire on fellow Americans. And so they know very well when they try to impose a dictatorship here, they're going to have to bring in foreign troops or troops from other areas who will follow orders blindly without ever thinking of the consequences. So
right.
Here you have this horrible situation and the massacre, and people are slaughtered. And did that pretty well break the spirit of the young people and the people of China, realizing that no matter what happened, the people in power were never going to forfeit their power?
Yeah, it was a wake-up call for the younger generation, at least for my generation, you know. Just dreams were shattered, so forget it. This is not happening. But we just, until that moment, nobody even thought shots would be fired on the students, on the citizens, just on the average people. We were always taught the military and the students, and we are one family, you know, the communist propaganda.
In other words, the military and the people were one family. And
right.
You figured that the military wouldn't fire on the people because you were all citizens, all part of this wonderful utopian society. And
right.
Well, that's really why they had to bring in the troops from another part of China to be willing to kill the people who were rising up.
Yeah.
But, of course, the people in power had no intention of forfeiting power. That's why here in the United States, we've had a law, the Posse Comitatus law, that the military could not be used against the American people.
Mm-hmm.
The Bush administration is doing everything they can to do away with the Posse Comitatus, knowing full well that we are going to have civilian unrest here. And after all, who's going to maintain the power? Oh, we only have to read the National Committee on Terrorism report, the so-called Paul Bremer report, came out in the year 2000 or 2001, talking about when the terrorist attacks come to America, they're going to have the military take control here in the United States. That's the National Committee on Terrorism. We have the report. You can pull it down off the internet. So there in China, why there are no hesitations about using the military to kill the people who are demonstrating. Here in America, why it'll be difficult, but they plan on doing away with Posse Comitatus law. The Ashcroft and Bush want to do away with Posse Comitatus. After all, we have to maintain law and order, don't we?
Right, definitely. You can't just rely on give all the power to one person.
No, you can't. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, then, you were able to come to the United States. How were you able to get out of communist China?
It was actually related to the Tiananmen massacre. Right after that, because all the Chinese people in America was supporting the Tiananmen demonstration students, and they were, at that time, they thought they cannot go back to China anymore. So United States actually passed a special one-time law to give the children of Chinese people in America, give them special visa to come over here if they are under 21. And at that time, I was like 20 and a half. So
you were able to come to the United States.
Right, I just made it.
How did the people of China feel when after the slaughter of the young people in Tiananmen Square, why the President of the United States gave most favored nation trading status to the communist Chinese, almost as if a reward for the brutal repression of the people. How did the Chinese people feel about that? Or were you even aware of what happened?
Well, it was, I feel like ever since then, people just being a really numb state, all right? People were just pretty shut out, say, I'm not going to think about it, just pretty much focusing on the economic growth and your own family, making more money. So just this numbness.
And so people really sort of forgot this idea of freedom and liberty and this idealism that had motivated the people at Tiananmen Square, because there was no hope. Did you almost have a feeling that it was hopeless to try to change the political system?
Right. People just don't want to even talk about it. There are always some really brave young people who speak out, and I always admire these people. But the general population just say, you know, we just know it's not worth even to discuss about it.
It's not even worth trying to discuss about it. So
what
we'll just try to do is survive, get ahead, and maybe we can make a lot of money and get a car and live better. Was that sort of the idea?
Yes, that's actually what's happening now. There's actually I went back to China last year. There's so much prosperity. Mature world, you know, not really spiritual world, but mature world, there's so much prosperity compared to about over 10 years ago when I left.
No, there's tremendous material changes there. As America pours billions of dollars in there, thousands of American corporations are relocating to China, to the major cities. The American government is subsidizing the companies that go over there into these special areas with the idea that if their plants are nationalized, why, the government will, of course, give them back not only the cost, but according to a congressman I interviewed, two or three times the cost. So we are encouraging them to go. We give them special tax breaks if they go over there and they keep their money out of the United States and don't reinvest it here, creating jobs. They get loans from the Overseas Investment Corporation. So many of our major corporations, which don't even need the loans, get the loans at very low interest rates so that they can go into China and build up the economy there as we destroy the economy here in the United States. And it really doesn't make sense unless you understand that we have people who have a different agenda in government. They are not loyal to this country. They're loyal to this globalist idea of a new world order and a new world religion. They're dedicated to the ideas laid out in the Earth Charter, redistribution of the wealth within the societies and between different countries. And that's point 10 in the Earth Charter. If you haven't read it, we'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of the Earth Charter, written by our good friend Mikhail Gorbachev. working with Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller, coming up with a new Ten Commandments for us. Of course, they're keeping it in the Ark of Hope, the satanic counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest, Faye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Faye Hall, and Faye was, of course, in China at the time of the Tiananmen Square uprising, and, of course, she was able to... she was called out of town, so she wasn't there when they turned the tanks and the machine guns loose on the people, and she really doesn't know how many people were killed. But eventually she was able to come to the United States because her parents were already living here. And, of course, did you ever continue with your medical studies?
No, actually, I'll be honest with you, I hated the medical school.
You really hated medical school, huh?
Yes, I went there just because my dad told me, if I'm a doctor, if we had a doctor in the family, my grandma wouldn't pass away so early. So kind of a family thing, but I really hate it. So when I came here, I had a chance to study computer science, and I'm a computer science.
Are you a computer programmer? What do you do?
Yes, I'm a computer programmer and working in the Silicon Valley now.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's wonderful that you could come here and get the training and, of course, be working over there. But you've been back. Now, one of the things that we hear about China is that there's a tremendous spiritual awakening among the people there because you have to have something to believe in. Materialism is all well and good, but man does not live by bread alone, and they really need something else. So would you like to tell us a little bit about what's happening in the Christian church in China?
Okay. Be honest with you, I really didn't have too much contact when I was in China with the Christian community because it's lots of secrecy, and most of them are in the rural areas, and it's like home churches. And but in China, just through other people I know who does missionary work back in China, but I met over here in the Bay Area, and I read lots of documents and the DVDs that came from China, documentaries. It's really inspiring. And the people there, when I read their stories, really have the similarity of 1,500 Christians in Europe. Because right now in China, if you're a true believer, you stand up, say, I only believe in Jesus, you can get killed. And there's people will be persecuted and being thrown in jail so many times. And when they talked about it, it's like everyday life. You know, yeah, I've been jailed this many times. It just really amazed me. It means so different being a Christian in China compared to what we go through here being a Christian.
Well, of course, problem would be if we ever had Christian persecution here, how many people would leave the wishy-washy churches that, you know, with the rock bands, how many would leave those, would be willing to stand up and give their life for their faith? And I fear that we've got a lot of people who are fair-weather Christians, but when the rubber really beats the road, their faith will be eroded. Well, our special guest this evening is Faye, and she was there in China at the time of the great Tiananmen Square massacre. And, of course, you remember, as I mentioned earlier, the President of the United States, to reward the Chinese for their fine activity, gave China a most favored nation treaty status immediately after Tiananmen Square and crushed the will of the resistance in China. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is Faye, and she's been talking about the Tiananmen Square uprising, talking about the fact that the will of the Chinese people was broken after Tiananmen Square, and especially with the fact that the American government continued to support this repressive, brutal government that had slaughtered its own people. and yet the American president, George Herbert Walker Bush, gave a most favored nation treaty status to the communist Chinese, and at that point, the Chinese more or less gave up who were there. They went on into materialism, they wanted to live their lives, but they realized that there was no hope for freedom because certainly America wasn't going to come to their help. But then, of course, the prosperity begins to come as America begins to pour countless billions of dollars, and so do the European countries, but so many of the American corporations are moving over there. And then Fay has said, really, how prosperous things are. Things really are very prosperous over there, aren't they?
Yes, in the material world.
In the material world, we hear about growing numbers of cars. In fact, one of the big drains on the oil supplies of the world is China will soon become the largest importer of oil in the world. And this is, of course, going to raise the prices of oil. In fact, one reason why the prices of commodities are going up so rapidly is as China begins to prosper, why she needs more and more products for her people. I mean, we are a nation of about 275 million people. They're a nation of 1.25 billion people. And as Napoleon had said so wisely many years ago, China, let China sleep, for when China awakes, the world will tremble. Mm-hmm. And incredibly, American foreign policy is doing everything they can to awaken the sleeping giant, which will soon, I fear, threaten the peace of the world, at least politically. But, of course, mm-hmm. Fay has been talking to us about the growth of the communist church there in China. And would you repeat a few of the things you said? Because a lot of the people weren't listening. They were, of course, the stations were disconnected from our conversation. So tell us really what's happening to the Christian church in China today.
There's a lot of inspiring stories. People really give them their lives to be Christian, to believe in Jesus. And there's also state-sponsored churches, which kind of cut off some few chapters of the Bible, which cannot be right? So there, one side, they say, oh, yeah, we believe, you know, we have a religious freedom. But on the other hand, they're actually still persecuting, jailing people who are true believers.
Now, you're talking about the three self church, the official government church, sort of like the official government church we have in America?
Right. It's a government-sponsored church.
Right. And then there's the home church. And that, my understanding is that the home church movement in China is really growing.
Yes, and their people will be saved and become being saved in thousands in a night. You know, people are really hungry for spiritual things. You can't be filled up with material prosperity. People are starving spiritually. That's what's happening.
And you say thousands of people will be converted in an evening?
Yes, and the miracles happen. There's just a way it's dark, and I think God really just performs so many more miracles than what we experience here, and literal miracles.
What sort of miracles? Could you give me any examples of those?
I never really firsthand experienced, but just heard from the people here. There are people were thrown in jail, and they were able just through prayer, and just like Peter, how he jumped off the wall and escaped from the jail. There were people like literally just walk out of jail on the like daylight, and our other brother, sister, witnesses seeing him going through the court and went through the front of the prison, and somehow nobody just saw him until he escaped.
And so it was almost miraculous then that he was able to escape. And he was right in plain sight. Nobody saw him.
Yes, just there are miracles like that, and God really delivers for these Christians.
And so God was looking after the Christians and protecting them, and those who were really willing to take a stand for him,
he would
take a stand for them. We're going to be back here in just a few moments. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest this evening is Fay, She's a computer programmer in Silicon Valley. She's a born-again Christian. But she's talking what's happening halfway around the world in China, that tragic nation that, of course, where we are supporting the brutal and repressive government of the Chinese government. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Faye. We've been talking about what's happening in Communist China today. Have you ever noticed how our media never refer to it as Communist China? As if somehow by not referring it to as Communist China, it's no longer a communist nation. But that's part of the facade, the mind control that would have us believe that if you don't say it's a communist, then it's no longer a communist nation. After all, aren't we told we won the Cold War, the communists, there is no more communism in the world? And yet, of course, there's communism in North Vietnam and in North Korea, and there's communism in China, and there's communism in Cuba, and there's communism in many of the African countries where we have brought communism to control in places like Rhodesia, they call it Zimbabwe today, where we brought the ruthless tyrant Mugabe to power. There's communism in South Africa, because Mandela is a lifelong communist, and the ANC is a communist revolutionary organization, but we don't want the American people to know that. The government in Southwest Africa we brought to power is a communist government. The government in Angola is a communist government. But you see, we can't let the American people understand that our leaders are not anti-communist. Oh, we take out a few communists here and there from time to time. But, of course, if you go back and you read how it was that Fidel Castro came to power, we knew he was a communist. I interviewed Ambassador Earl Smith, who was the American ambassador to China at the time of the Cuban Revolution. And he told me, as I sat in his home there, a palatial home in Palm Beach, Florida, back in 1980, and he was a billionaire. He was the only billionaire I ever interviewed, very gracious, that as the ambassador, he was ordered to tell the president of Cuba at that time, Batista, that he would leave the following day. And when you get an order from the American ambassador, you leave the following day. It's like getting an order from the mafia. If you don't leave, why, maybe the mafia will be by to see you, or an assassin will strike you down. But when you're ordered by the American government to do something, it's like an order you can't refuse. And I asked the ambassador, well, did you know Fidel Castro was a communist? He said, of course. And the State Department knew he was a communist. Mm-hmm. And yet, of course, we brought him to power anyway. But this is what people don't understand. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find out that the reason communists came to China was because of the American State Department that seemed to have a different agenda than the American people. For they saw nothing wrong with communism. In fact, I think they really did not want the competition from a successful post-war China to be competing with the United States in those years following the Second World War. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening is Faye, and she lives here in the United States now, and she travels back to Communist China from time to time. When was the last time you were back there, Faye?
About a year ago, around the Christmas time.
Now, do you go every year or two? How often have you been back?
Every 1 or 2 years.
And what about the repression of the people? Are they still a totalitarian police state as far as the individual? As long as, I suppose, as you don't speak out against the government, everything's all right?
Yeah, pretty much. As long as you don't talk politics, you're okay.
What about in the churches? Are they allowed to talk anything about politics?
Oh, church, you can be a believer, but you cannot gather together illegally.
In other words, you can be a believer, but you're not supposed to have these home church meetings. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's illegal.
But what do they do when they find them? Because you can't get, you know, a couple of hundred people at a meeting without somebody knowing about it.
The churches, it's all these homegrown churches, they have a good system. They will have people watch out when the meeting is going on. But if it's if the police did come, they would just run. And but people did get caught at these gatherings a lot, actually.
Well, what about the, getting the Bibles? And are there plenty of Bibles for the people there in the home churches?
Right now, they are. Used to be, I remember, I think right after the Cultural Revolution, there were probably not even one or two Bibles in the whole country. But because all the missionary from the United States and all different countries help, there are lots and lots of Bibles in China now. It's not too hard to get a Bible.
So you can get Bibles fairly readily then?
Yeah.
All right. What about the three self churches, the government churches, have regular Bibles, or have they taken anything out of those Bibles?
They, for the longest time until very recently, they just take out the Revelation, a few chapters. I personally haven't really read a Bible like that, but it becomes more and more acceptable right now. You can actually get a full version Bible. Not that hard.
I'm sorry, not a what?
You can easily get a whole Bible right now.
You can get a whole Bible now, because I know probably 10, 15 years ago they were pretty hard to get the Bibles in there. But now, do they actually print them in China, or are they allowed to import them? Where are the Bibles coming from?
Still smuggled. It's not legal to bring all the Bible prints from.
No, it's no longer illegal to bring Bibles into the country?
It's still illegal, but you can just bring one copy or two of DVDs. It's kind of loosened up now.
So in other words, they're not really so concerned about you bringing the Bibles into the country.
Right, which is, I think it's great.
Well, I think it is, too. And are they still, though, as oppressive as the home churches as they have been in the past? Are they still searching them out and then, throwing the people into prison? Mm-hmm. Or are they sort of just turning a blind eye and letting the people go to the home churches?
Well, it's both. It's not because they're that afraid of Christianity. They're just afraid of people get together for the different cause, because, you know, a dictatorship or communist actually is very weak when you think about it. So they need to make sure everything is under control. And everything, anything a little bit out of their control, and a bigger gathering, they get nervous, you know.
Now, of course, when we have our anti-war demonstrations here, even though I think that they're rather futile, but they always have their spies there. Now, do they still have a lot of spies in the country reporting on everybody as they have in the past, or has that sort of gone by the wayside?
No, but I haven't met a spy myself. Maybe I just don't know. Yeah.
But I've heard that they had actually had people here in the United States reporting on what the Chinese in the United States were doing. Have you ever run into that? I know that my friend Stephen Mosher wrote a book about a woman here in the United States who was going to have a child, and she was told, you know, if she was Chinese, even though she was in the United States, she couldn't have a second child. They actually had people watching her here in this country. The book was called A Mother's Story. And she lived in constant fear, even here in the United States, because they had communist agents watching her every move. Does that thing still go on in the United States, do you think, or is that sort of a passé?
It's either in the past or it's very rare. I mean, I never experienced something like that, or my Chinese friend never experienced.
Okay, so you don't think that they are watching the Chinese who are over here. Are you an American citizen yet?
Actually, I just went through an interview to become a citizen this year, yes.
So you don't want to become an American citizen?
Right.
Why do you want to become an American citizen and not go back to China? What is the difference between living here and living there?
Well, it's not like a security, you know, like you're getting a social security. I'm just, with an American passport, it's easy to travel, and in case one day, who knows, there's a bad dictator in China, things change, I won't be impacted that much. You know, you still have that fear.
You still have that fear of,
not remote. It's more on my back of my mind. Mostly it's easy to travel. And also, this country really gives me a lot. Just all the opportunities, and I have a family now, I have two children. Just so much this country has offered me, you know.
Well, you know, the thing, Faye, is that I think most Americans really don't value freedom because they've never lived without it. They've never lived in a country where people can disappear, where people are watched and monitored, and people can be slaughtered for expressing a desire for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Here in America, why, everybody takes freedom for granted. In fact, they're quite willing to give it up in the name of, well, fighting terrorism or whatever the current threat will be. And this is really what's so frightening to me. I think only those who've lived without freedom really value it.
Totally. Actually, my husband is an American. And he actually doesn't care about politics that much. And I actually told him, the only reason you can live so happy and not worry about politics is because you're in the United States. I was in China, everybody has to know about politics. You have to know what you're supposed to say. You know, it's just so different.
And I think that's really so true. Well, we've got Roger calling then from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Yes, thank you. And I'd like to ask, Faye, if you could tell me what comments you've heard from other American and mainland Chinese Christians regarding certain Christian ministries bragging about how they actually get the communist Chinese government to print their Bibles for them.
Mm. Thanks. So that's like a really good question. Well, I actually want to talk more about that too.
God bless.
Yeah, thanks. In China, I think God is doing so much work there. And if any missionary go there, it's very welcome. It's really good cause, but it has to be in a partnership, not like say, I'm going there, I'm going to make other Christian right. It has to be homegrown, and help is welcome, but it's more like a equal partnership. Does that answer the question?
All right, fine. Well, you think that really, if there's going to be a transformation of China, it's going to have to be by homegrown Christians, not by people coming from other countries?
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I certainly agree, and I'm really excited about a lot of the things that are going on over there. And we hear about this tremendous growth of the Christian church. We've heard that there's somewhere between 50 and 80 million Christians in China. Have you heard that?
Yes, actually the number is huge and cannot be accurate because there's so many different small groups of believers and little gatherings. It will never be accurate, but it sounds about right.
Okay, so you think it's what, closer to 50 or closer to 100?
Closer
to 50 or 80?
Yeah, about 100.
About 100 million. Of course, that's a tremendous growth. You know, when the missionaries went there before the Second World War, you know, when they got a few converts, they thought there was really something.
Mm-hmm.
But the missionaries laid the groundwork, but of course they've long since gone, and it's really now something being left up to the Chinese people themselves to spread the gospel. And apparently there are lots of totally dedicated Chinese ministers who are willing to go to jail, who are willing to profess the faith, and this is really attracting tremendous support from the Chinese people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I also want to emphasize all the early missionary work in the 1930s, and their people also get persecuted being the early missionaries from the Western country. But they really planted a seed, and even though it took so many years for that seed to really got off the ground, but they laid the groundwork, just like you said.
All right, well, Roger is calling back again from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Roger, did you have something else you wanted to ask?
Yeah, that my concern with the last question was about basically that those Chinese Christians getting stuck with defective Bibles.
Well, are they defective Bibles? So that's the question.
Well, if they are printed by the Chinese government or anywhere in China, I assume that would be the case, yes?
Right. There are lots of government-printed Bibles, but people know better. The real Christians, they know where to get the real Bibles. And,
okay, so the Chinese are a lot smarter than the American missionaries. Anything else, there, Roger?
All right, fine.
Well, do you think that the rising prosperity in China will have an impact upon the spread of Christianity? Or do you think the Christians are really sort of going to ignore what's happening, in the financial sphere and still cling to their religious beliefs?
Well, I think it's just the good and evil and the God and the Satan is just all there, and the fight is just so intense over there. And the people just will just worship money, and they will do anything to make a few bucks. And there's no humanity, you know. There's so much bad. And on the other side, there is just all these faithful Christians. It's just amazing that the fight between these two is so intense over there.
Well, certainly there's tremendous prosperity. People are getting cars. They've never had cars before. They're going around on bicycles. And now, they're talking about turning out millions of cars every year for the Chinese people. There will be an expensive cars, but at least it'll be a car. It must be pretty exciting for the people now to have really some of the advantages that we have, maybe a television set, things of that sort. Are these things coming in over there?
Yes, actually. To me, it's a big problem. There's really bad pollution, and actually government is trying very hard to control the pollution, but it's really a big problem right now. And you have all these cars, but nowhere to park.
Well,
the traffic is really bad in Beijing or Shanghai.
Well, the thing is that when you stop and think of the number of people there, that if you can begin to open up this market, there could be tremendous opportunity to sell large amounts of goods over there. But they're not going to be made here in the United States. American goods are not allowed to go in there over there. Oh, well, the Chinese say that they won't put any barriers in, but they do because they don't tell the truth. And what we have done is create a situation where they've told the American people, look at all those 1.25 billion people, all the products they're going to buy from us. They're not going to buy any products from us. They can manufacture it over there. And when we do have products other than perhaps a bee or Boeing planes, which they're just getting from us now so they can learn how to make them, and pretty soon they'll be make them just as good or maybe even better than we can. And at that point, we're not going to have anything to export. And the American people don't understand that there's an organized program to transfer the wealth of this country to China and to Brazil and to India and to Russia. And those are the four countries that are going to be the major industrial centers of the next decade. But we can't let the American people know that, because they'd be pretty upset if they knew that we were going to destroy the middle class here and transfer their wealth to other countries. And they're not watching what's happening, as there is a planned program to destroy the value of the dollar and, of course, the life savings of so many of the American people. That's what's known as globalism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you see what's going on in China, and you see the increasing prosperity, do you find that prosperity is bringing happiness or simply stimulating people's desire for more and more material possessions?
My feeling is it's more towards more and more. It's just more evil. We just really have to, it's almost like hopeless. People are just stuck into this money thing, making more and more money, status. And there's so many more problems coming. When I grew up, I never knew about drugs. Now there's a drug problem, prostitution, just crime. Just all these things are coming with money, all these things.
And so there is this opium or cocaine, or what sort of drugs is it that's sweeping across China?
Well, I think right now it's just about everything.
So you're getting all the same things. Well, you ought to have a, you know, we have a war on drugs here in the United States, and every time we declare a war on anything, why, we get more of it. And so I hope they don't have a war on drugs over there. They'll be in real trouble.
Yeah, it's just all kinds of drugs and gambling, pornography. You know, it's just nothing good coming out of this.
Well, it sounds like they're becoming more and more like the United States.
Yeah, they're for sure picking up all the bad things.
And this is really such a tragedy. At one time, America offered hope to the people of the world and financed, you know, missionaries going throughout the world. But that's no longer the case. Today, the United States is the largest exporter of pornography anywhere in the world. American television, so much of it has sexual overtones and frank pornography. Of course, we do have some good movies coming out today, perhaps more than in the past, but still, those old films we've made circulating throughout the world are breaking down the moral fabric of society. What would the message you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight, Faye?
Well, I just think, even with all these bad things happening, America still has so much to offer, and as an American, as a country, still should continue press on the humanity issue, the human rights. I mean, when you start pushing, you know, Chinese government will do react a little bit. If you don't push, then nothing's going to happen. So that has to continue. And also, as a missionary work, we always talk about go to other different foreign countries to do missionary work. But there are lots of Chinese people here, like really having, you know, the low class, like restaurant workers, those people are suffering like today. And actually, I'm trying to help these people as well. But just missionary work is all around us as well. Not just in some remote land.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate you're here and you're working with the people in this country, the Chinese in this country, trying to, of course, bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Faye, thank you so very much for being with us. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Faye, and I hope you enjoyed the program this evening. Faye, you know, speaks with such intensity, some difficulty with the language, but I hope you could understand enough of this. As she describes what's happening in China, the materialism is not bringing happiness, it's bringing decadence to China, and this once very, very proud land based upon Confucianism, you know, is really teetering, and the only really stabilizing force is the growing Christian movement there, with people who really believe enough to stand up for their faith and risk their lives and their jobs and their families. So let's maybe we can learn a little bit from the people there in China today. Now, earlier I commented that the United States had brought communism to China. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we go into how the American State Department brought communism to China, put an embargo on General Chiang Kai-shek, the Nationalist Army, so they couldn't buy weapons anywhere in the world, and even the weapons they'd already bought and purchased, they weren't allowed to get, that the Congress appropriated $125 million worth of weapons, and that would be equivalent to probably 10 times that much today, and the State Department wouldn't let the ships sail to China with the weapons on board. They were kept in ports in San Francisco and Los Angeles for a year and a half, as the Chinese Nationalist Army retreated before the onslaught of the Communist armies, because the Chinese Nationalist Army had nothing to fight with. And when finally the ships were released and they arrived in China and they unpacked these crates of rifles, the rifles didn't have any bolts in them and were useless. We brought communism to China intentionally and purposely. And if you'd like to get the government report on that, we call it the McCarran Committee Report, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of that. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, ask for the McCarran Committee Report. All this was brought out in congressional committees immediately after the Second World War and the fall of China. But, of course, this is never taught in our schools today, because the last thing they want you to know is that the American government has been the major force financing and bringing communism to people throughout the world. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and for those who might be disagreeing with what I have just said about how the American government has been financing communism, why you need to get the video called The Best Enemies Money Can Buy. It's interview I did with Professor Sutton before he passed away. He used to be at the Hoover Institute, but of course the Hoover Institute did not want these truth brought out, and so he became persona non grata. We have both my interview on video, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, and Professor Sutton's excellent book, The Best Enemy Money Can Buy. You can get his book, Wall Street and the Rise of Bolshevism. And, of course, you can also read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, going into the background of how we have financed communism since its inception. But we can't let the American people know that, because if they knew that, they'd begin to question so much of what we're being told today, like the two-party system, where we have two parties, both directed by the same group of people, both moving towards the New World Order and the New World Religion and globalization and supporting the war in Iraq. They supposedly put on a great show, sort of like Amos and Andy, or Lewis and Martin, or Abbott and Costello, but it's all a show. They fight back and forth, they argue back and forth, but that's all show. Both candidates, both the Democrat and the Republican candidates, come from the Skull and Bone Society, and of course Mr. Kerry comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. George Bush's father was a director of the Council on Foreign Relations, and just by chance, George Bush picked his Secretary of State, his National Security Advisor, his Vice President, and most of the key people in key positions in the State Department all come from the Council on Foreign Relations, of which Mr. Kerry is a member. So it really doesn't matter whether the Democrats or Republicans are there. The same policies continue, but we can't let the American people understand that democracy, of course, is a fraud. America is a republic, for as our founding fathers said, and James Madison wrote in the 10th of the Federalist Papers, democracies are air spectacles of turbulence and contention. Are air incompatible with the rights of private property and personal liberty, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. But you never read that in school. That's the 10th of the Federalist Papers. Time to get your education, time to get your information, and help us save America. So we hope that many of you out there will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and helping us is 5 hours a day. We reach out across America trying to educate the American people. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day. The first hour is on the American Freedom Network. The second, third hours on the afternoon in Genesis. We did lose our satellite connection from American Freedom, but you can still listen to us on the internet at AmericanNewsNet.com. Genesis is GCNLive.com, and of course Radio Liberty is RadioLiberty.com. So you can listen 5 hours a day. You can listen to our archive programs. You can pull our letters down. Of course, we prefer that you join the Radio Liberty family, and we sent them to you, or that you subscribe to our newsletter. But if you're not able to do that, feel free to go to our website, pull down our newsletters, and copy them, and get them to other people. Help us disseminate the truth about what's going on. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like a free copy of our March newsletter, which will tell you what happened at the secret meetings held in the cabinet during the opening months of the year 2001, 8 to 9 months before the 9-1-1 attack. Why you want to get our March newsletter tells you what they were talking about there at those secret cabinet meetings. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you finally to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we truly are at war today. Our freedom, our future, our families are under attack. And so until tomorrow, at the same time, it's Dr. Stan. Good night, and may the Lord be with you.